Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik filling in for Lucy May. Coming up a little later in the program, why have tens of millions of dollars designated to help parents pay for after-school activities for their kids gone unspent? But first, changes are coming to the way Ohio rates the state's child care programs. While supporters say it will be a big help to kids, others argue it will hurt some longtime providers. Joining me for today's discussion are President and CEO of 4C for Children, Vanessa Freitag. Hi, Vanessa.
Hi.
Budget health researcher at Policy Matters Ohio, Catherine Poe. Hi, Catherine.
Hello.
And Blossom Academy Operations Director, Bridget Cameron. Hi, Bridget.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Glad to have you all here. We'd like to hear from you, too. You can email talk@wvxu.org or give us a call at 513-419-7100. Well, I appreciate you all being here. I wanted to sort of go right to the beginning of things a little bit to find out exactly what is changing. This is called the Step Up to Quality Program, and it has been created by the new Department of Children and Youth. And Vanessa, I'm going to start with you. What's changing?
So there's a lot of things that are changing, but specifically the system, which was a five-level system, five-star, one to five, which was a voluntary system for most programs. There are a few that have some requirements to be in the quality system, is shifting to a three-level system. And that three-level system will be bronze, silver, and gold. And in its first year, any one- and two-star program will be automatically a bronze star. A three-star program would be a silver, and a four- or five-star program will be a gold. Now, beyond just the names of the various levels, the department is also adding and changing some of the guidelines. So one of the ones that we've talked about a lot with childcare programs is if you are a one or two star in the previous system, you were required to start to understand and learn about curriculum. And curriculum, parents might be surprised, there's curriculum that goes all the way down to infants. And it's very important to help with the development of our children. That was something that you were exploring as a one and two star, but not required to actually implement. You must, by the end of this first year, have actually implemented curriculum, which is a great thing for our children.
And Bridget, as a health or as a child care provider, tell us what your thoughts are about these changes.
Well, the thoughts that I have about these changes with most of us providers, these changes are truly going to hurt us, because when they did the changes, they did not bring providers to the table. So when they did the changes, they took away some paperwork, but added more duties and took away a lot of the funding. So as a three-star center, my money has now decreased by over $2,000 a month less I will now receive for my children in the center.
I'm going to interrupt you just a second. Where does this money come from? I mean, we haven't talked about that yet. I'm going to wait to talk about that. So if you're all wondering what money, let's talk a little bit about more what you have to say, and then we're going to explain where the money comes from and how it's distributed.
Okay. So that's a big part of how it hurts the providers. The providers, we're not standing behind the Step Up to Quality changes that have been put into place, because it decreases a lot of things that we have to do for our centers, our homes. The families are not getting the care that they will need to get with these changes that have put in place with Step Up to Quality.
Catherine, what are your thoughts?
So I think that one of the most important things to keep in mind is that a lot of these changes are happening because our current Department of Children and Youth is stuck in between a rock and a hard place in our system. So this agency is funded in part by the federal government dollars. And recently there were changes. And so the federal government gave money to states in order to increase the amount of money that they could give directly to providers. However, what kind of happened in that change is that the department was not actually given some of these additional funds from the legislature that they needed in order to make this change run smoothly. And so as a result, the department was kind of forced to collapse the system from a previous five-star program into a three-star program. And when that happened, the kind of algorithm for how childcare providers got that money changed. And the result has been that a lot of providers are making a lot less per week than they previously would have. And for a lot of these providers, they're small businesses with really, really thin margins. And that has meant that these margins are just getting thinner and thinner at a time when things are just getting more and more expensive. And so I think that this pinch for providers like Bridget, it feels more pronounced because of the current economic situation and because a lot of them haven't gotten a raise in a very, very long time. And so that money that these providers were really supposed to be getting from the federal government, they didn't get the full amount that they were promised, and they also haven't gotten a raise, many of them, in 20 years.
Well, I want to talk about the money end of things here because we've been mentioning it a lot, and just so people understand how it works. So, money comes from the federal government. Vanessa, maybe you can help with this.
Sure.
It comes from the federal government. And then, is it given to anybody who opens a child care, is a child care provider in Ohio?
That's a great question. So, the money that Catherine and that Bridget are talking about is the monies that if you are a program that works with families, has children that those families get help from the state to pay for care. That's called publicly funded child care. Sometimes people call it vouchers. That's the money that we're talking about because you are reimbursed as a child care provider for that care or partially reimbursed. And I have to say, I agree 100% with Catherine and Bridget that the funding is problematic. The money has not fully followed the changes, and the dilemma that Catherine describes is correct. And I would say we should not have to sacrifice the quality of care for our children because of the dollars, nor should we have to sacrifice the businesses who come to work every day because of their love and concern for children along the way. This should not be the dilemma that people face every day.
Bridget, did you have anything you wanted to add?
I do. We were concerned for as the providers that we were not brought to the table when the step up the quality changes were made. Being that there are a lot of African-American and women of color who own these facilities, no one came and spoke to us about how these changes will affect the communities. The needs in our communities, such as Avondale, Price Hill, Forest Park looks differently for a school that's sitting in Amberley Village that's receiving PFCC vouchers program. And when you all mentioned that not everyone has to participate in the program, but they still receive federal funding. If you receive, I believe, 10% of voucher children, you do not have to participate in the Step Up to Quality program, but everyone else has to. So it's like they differentiated who will get the funding if you work with a certain sector of children.
So some,
and then they increase the money.
I'm a little confused. So some providers,
yes,
this is voluntary for, and others they're required?
Correct. So,
correct.
So there's, based on the, we work with all programs across 15 counties in sort of this southern area of Ohio, all the way up to Greater Dayton. Based on what we looked at, about 40% of centers are still required, and this is based on the percentage of publicly funded children that are in their program. They meet a particular threshold. Anyone outside of that is not required, and family child care also is not required. What I would point out, though, is some of that's been true for a while, and there are so many providers that chose to be in the quality system and chose to go through the rigor and the expense and all the other things that Bridget's described because they wanted to do well for their children and their families. So, you know, it's one of these things where this is a problem we need to fix for our children as well as for the providers.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100. If you have a question, we go now to Tammy. Hi, Tammy. What's your question?
Hi. Yeah, one of the speakers said that the money isn't, the legislature didn't give enough money to the department to make this work better in terms of providers being funded. Why is that? I'd like more information on that, especially as a voter of our state legislature. Thank you.
Thank you. Who can answer that?
I can talk a little bit about it.
Thanks,
so I think that the thing to keep in mind here is that during the pandemic, a lot of state legislatures realized that childcare was a really, really important problem. And so you had a lot of states like Kentucky and even Tennessee, even like states around us, start to take really, really purposeful looks at their childcare programs and make certain expansions. Ohio did not do this. So one good example is in Kentucky, they actually decided to open up publicly funded childcare for all childcare providers, right? And this stabilized their workforce. It added additional dollars and they added funding along with it. And the state of Ohio has not done this. And it's basically gotten to the point where childcare in Ohio has the lowest eligibility in the country for children 0 to 5. And so this all has to do with how much money the state legislature is actually willing to put in state money, not federal money, state share taxpayer dollar money toward childcare. And they really, really haven't given the substantial investment that a lot of these programs need to actually be successful compared to what a lot of other states in the country have been pursuing recently.
Do we know why?
I mean, I think that it has a lot to do with the devaluation of particularly labor, but women's labor, and particularly the labor of women of color. I think that we often see these care roles as less than and perhaps not worthy of that investment. I think we also are at a time where our supermajority legislature has taken up a lot of other issues. We had the least active state legislature in, I believe, 50 years last year. And so our state lawmakers are not doing what they should be doing with our tax dollars, and they're not necessarily considering the issues that people care about, which in this instance is childcare. Childcare polls extremely well all over the state, especially in rural districts, but they are not necessarily concerned about that in the way that they should be.
Vanessa, you're shaking your head. Dude.
I am. You know, so what? And this again is one of these issues where, in theory, they could expand access to childcare, and the way they could do that, meaning more families could qualify, and the way they could do that is by further lowering the reimbursement rates of childcare programs. So I agree completely. There are many states that there's not only federal money, but you have an opportunity as a state in most states, including ours, to add state money to it. And that has not occurred.
We're talking about changes in how Ohio rates child care programs. We'll continue our discussion in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik filling in for Lucy May. Later in the program, why is money set aside to help pay for kids' after-school activities not being spent? First, we continue our discussion about how Ohio rates child care programs. My guests are President and CEO of 4C for Children, Vanessa Freitag, Budget Health Researcher at Policy Matters Ohio, Catherine Poe, and Blossom Academy Operations Director, Bridget Cameron. We'd like to hear from you, too. You can email talk at WVXU.org or give us a call at 513-419-7155. Just before we took the break, we were talking about the funding and how it's set up and what the state legislature has and has not done. Bridget, I didn't give you a chance to weigh in on that. Did you have anything you wanted to add?
I do. Catherine brought up about how the money is not being distributed between the federal and the state, what they're not doing. So also here with the state of Ohio, we are working at a 50 percentile reimbursement rate, which we're supposed to be at a 75%, which the state of Ohio was found being neglectful in not giving providers their 75% rate that we were supposed to be getting. We have been getting paid at the 50 percentile rate since 2011. Inflation has happened. A lot of things have taken place. And they are just now trying to raise us up to the 75 percentile, which has taken effect this month. So a lot of the providers are suffering because, like we've mentioned before, we haven't had a raise in years. Inflation has went up. Things are going up. We're parents cannot even afford to get on the voucher system. If they get a raise, they get a dollar raise, they're kicked off, or they have to pay voucher fees of totaling of $100 a month. And it's really hard for the parents to make it. The state of Ohio needs to stand up and give the providers their just due. We are due 75% and should have been at the 75% years ago. They should backdate our pay from 2011 up till now, like most states have followed suit and have been paying their providers the correct fee.
Catherine, is there any hope that you think that could happen?
I think that, honestly, childcare in our state is at a turning point. You're seeing a lot of state lawmakers, particularly Representative White, in the legislature, really start to take this issue on. There have been a lot of bipartisan bills around childcare. But I think the thing that's really stuck out to me is that our legislature knows that this is an issue, but they're not necessarily, a lot of these bills are not fronting the amount of money that it would actually take to build the system in the way that it needs to be. So there are a lot of these tiny individual fixes that people want to do. But the reality is that this is a problem that is going to cost hundreds of millions of dollars to fix. That is the kind of money that is required to have a holistic childcare solution. And so while I'm really, really happy that the legislature has started taking this problem seriously and is maybe picking up some of the lighter lift items, this issue actually needs like hundreds of millions of dollars of investment. And we need to start getting like used to talking about those bigger numbers now, so that it'll be easier to talk about them once the budget season comes around.
So that's the future problem, I guess, or current problem, but future solution. Let's talk about what is really happening now in terms of this change in the rating system from the 5-star to the 3-star, the gold medal plan, however you want to look at that. What, Vanessa, are mm-hmm. some of the specific things that providers, and you know, Bridget alluded to some of them, have to do, right. And how is there any way that this can benefit kids?
So a couple of things. One is we as the Child Care Resource and Referral Agency, and our job is to help and support all those child care programs that are in our 15 counties to help families find care. We're very concerned about any ripple effect that will come from this. So we're monitoring, you know, are programs still open? Are they having to reduce classrooms? Things like that. Because that loss of capacity is something, and I think Bridget mentioned that is something we're really worried about. So, but, you know, the problem with that is, like, the horse is already out of the barn. So to your question about now, a couple of things. You know, some of the things that we are doing, we are trying to, despite all that we just talked about, find people that do want this career. We're very honest with them about the realities of the career. At the same time, so many people that are in this career, they do it because they love it. They do it because every day they see that they make a difference. And so, for example, with local funding here that included City of Cincinnati and Hamilton County, so this is not state dollars, this is not federal dollars, they were able to help us put a program together called Child Care Careers. And it's basically re-careering people. This is not our, you know, high school students or college students. And within less than 18 months, there's been about 120 plus brand new teachers that have come to the profession and are loving it. We help them get trained. We do all of that. The key, though, is they get paid while they're learning. Child care, you know, I think about growth in manufacturing and how much funding did we fund as a state to say, hey, let's get people trained in this and let's pay them while they're learning, or IT. That has not happened for child care. It's just one more example of this, but some of what at least we're trying to do is tackle it locally, you know, inch by inch, certainly on a local level. There is the will and there has been some commitment in terms of dollars.
Bridget, are you finding that as you're looking for people to work for you?
Yes, we're finding it very hard to find people who have the passion for childcare, who have the knowledge. And then on top of that, when you do find people who do have the passion and knowledge, you can't afford to pay them what they're worth, because you can make more at Chick-fil-A frying chicken, making sandwiches, than you do caring for someone's child. So we're finding it very hard to keep our centers with teaching staff that are knowledgeable about the childcare industry. We want to make sure that we have teaching staff that's knowledgeable and that has the love for children. And you just don't want to bring anyone into a childcare facility. So when people are looking for a job, and I've had most of my teaching staff are degreed, and most of them aren't making degreed salaries from college. They're not making it because you can't afford to pay them. So we're finding it very hard to employ and keep our centers full with the teaching staff.
So talk about this new program then and how it will affect them. Are they going to have to get more training?
So, yeah, the standards that are now being put into place, and it varies depending upon which level you're in. Some of the things that have changed are some additional hours. So there's continuing education requirements that's been in place for a while. It has upped those, and it used to be that you had to attain all of those within a 2-year time frame. Now, basically, it's 20 hours, 10 hours each year. So you have to do 10 each year to make up to 20. And, you know, that may sound simple, but, you know, as you've heard, it's pretty darn complicated when every time a teacher has to go 4 additional hours of training. Well, can you even afford to pay them when they're in those classes? We run many of those classes there in evenings and weekends. You know, a program may not even be able to pay them for their own professional education time. Or if you're going to do it during the day, well, then you have to have a substitute teacher. And as we just talked about, you know, the supply is small. So this is, again, like a rock and a hard place, I think, is what Catherine said. You know, and that literally puts our children between the rock and the hard place, because this is great. As Bridget said, we want teachers that are qualified and learning and growing. And then we make it very hard for them to do that.
Catherine, do you have any hope that this can be speedy in any regard, or that there's more money ever going to be available? It's interesting to me when you talk about they need this extra training. Then once they get it, do they get paid more because they have extra training? I mean, if I remember right, and I am not a teacher and never have been, but in a lot of schools, when somebody has their bachelor's degree, they get paid a certain amount. Mm-hmm. They go back and get their master's and their salary increases. Mm-hmm. Is that true for childcare providers?
I think that on this issue, it's pretty complicated because, you know, I think that it's really easy to say that additional educational attainment is good from a legislature perspective. It sounds good. It sounds really common sense. But the reality is that not only are we requiring teachers to take time out of their classrooms where they might not be getting paid, but we also need to be really aware of the additional things that we're asking a lot of these centers and home-based providers to actually give. You know, we can't expect everyone to be a social worker, right? And so one of the things that these requirements actually often have in them is like additional things where you have to be, you know, monitoring and checking in with families and making sure that they get the resources they need. I would compare this to often what's happened to librarians in our communities, where librarians are often asked to be social workers. I feel like that's what we're often asking of childcare providers, often under the guise of additional educational attainment. But then we're not necessarily paying them more, right? So I think that giving communities these resources, it's so important. Child care providers are this first line of defense. We recognize that a child care provider is trusted in their community. We want to get these communities the actual resources they need. But maybe that needs to come through funding social workers and funding people's wages and making sure that a child care provider can go home at night, feed their family, feed themselves, get a solid 8 hours of sleep, and then wake up present and ready to be with that family, mm-hmm. rather than the scenario that they're currently facing.
We're almost out of time. I want to give Bridget a chance to weigh in for our last word.
Oh, yes, totally.
Yeah. Yes. So in this project here that we work with, I work with CEO, which is the Care Economy Organization, who helps childcare facilities, meaning all childcare providers, take collective action on issues that impact our childcare community. And we are employing that all providers sign up and even those who are listening, to help us make a change in this community, in the Ohio childcare community. And you can sign up at the CEOProjectOhio.org so we can make this change and make sure our children are receiving the care that they deserve, and make sure parents, that all of these working parents, can help receive vouchers and find good quality care for their children.
Thank you all for being here. Yeah, we are out of time. I'm so sorry. We could talk about this for a long time. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. I know I've learned a lot, that's for sure. I've been talking with President and CEO of 4C for Children, Vanessa Freitag, Budget and Health Researcher at Policy Matters Ohio, Catherine Poe, and Blossom Academy Operations Director, Bridget Cameron. In just a moment, why COVID money to help pay for after-school activities for kids is going unspent. This is Cincinnati Edition.